reading this morning is from Genesis, and it's chapter 39, Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and he ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home, and then she told this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those he held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Right, good morning. Now, I didn't realise, Ben, that this was supposed to be fun. And it's a bit late to rewrite it. So anyway, let's just go with what we've got. The Shawshank Redemption. Fantastic film. Anybody seen it? Yes. Excellent. So it is regularly voted by IMDb as being one of the top 250 films. And it was released in anybody apart from that row there. Anybody would like to hazard a guess as to what year it first hit the screens? 94. So, yeah, certainly a lot earlier than I thought. So for those of you who haven't seen it, The Shawshank Redemption is about an upstanding banker, Andy Dufresne, wrongly convicted of murder, sentenced to life imprisonment in the brutal Shawshank prison. And Whilst maintaining his innocence throughout his long stretch in prison, Andy becomes admired by his fellow inmates for his integrity and his unquenchable sense of hope through compassion. And in many ways, that's exactly what we've got here. So we've got an upstanding man living his life, going about his daily business, who suddenly finds himself ripped out of that world and dumped into another. So it's a story of him being stripped of his status and his family and his freedom, and then facing the terror of enslavement and imprisonment and how he responds. So let's get started. So we start with Joseph being bought by Potiphar, so Pharaoh's captain of the guard. And as we heard from Ben last week, Joseph has gone from being the favourite son, so much so that his dad gifted him the ornate robe, the Technicolor dream coat. So he's gone from that to then being sold into slavery by his own brothers, who actually had first considered killing him instead before they thought, huh, we can make some money out of this deal. And there are many accounts in the Bible of upstanding, God-fearing men and women battling in extremely challenging and often heartbreaking situations. And in fact, when Jesus is trying to gently prepare his disciples for his own imminent betrayal and trial and death by crucifixion, in John 16, verse 33, it says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble." And it may be that somebody needs to hear that this morning, that it's not unchristian to have rubbish happen in our lives. It doesn't mean we're being punished by God or that he doesn't love us as much as he loves others. It doesn't mean that we haven't prayed enough or hard enough or our faith isn't strong enough, because if it was, then God would just take all this bad stuff away. And it absolutely doesn't mean that there isn't a God. So God has given us loads of examples in the Bible of people going through their own turmoil. God has given us that wonderful gift of free will. So when we feel loved by somebody, we know that they really, really love us. It's their choice. They're not being operated by God like a ventriloquist dummy. But it also means that humans have the capacity to do bad stuff, like sell their brother into slavery. So the story continues. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, there's a lot of psychological research, and it consistently emphasizes the critical importance of strong social connections and the company of loved ones as a fundamental human need, particularly in times of crisis and stress. And I know that when my late husband was poorly, there was absolutely nothing me or the children could do other than just be with him. And I'm sure we've all had situations in our lives where we felt so utterly helpless when somebody known to us is really struggling and we just can't make it any better. And even though it feels totally inadequate, just standing by that person means more than we could ever imagine. And as Martin mentioned the other week, when he was preaching and he noticed that somebody who normally sits upstairs, they came down to sit with somebody during the service that they'd noticed was really upset. And it was such a perfect illustration of love shown when we accompany another person through the ups and downs of life. And this is what we can do, not only in church, but in our families, in the workplace, and in our communities. Have that courage, because sometimes it does take courage to walk or sit alongside somebody in pain, whether it's physical or emotional pain. But I'm also sure that there's many of us who have had times when we felt alone and isolated, and certainly Joseph must have felt like this. But the good news is Joseph wasn't alone because God was with him. And don't, if you're like me, don't you just hate lines like that? It makes it sound so simple. Ah, God was with Joseph, so everything was all okay. But actually, remembering this when we're in the midst of crisis is so hard, if not impossible. But just as in our loving relationships, there are times when we don't feel in love, but our feelings, so these chemical reactions that happen because of things around us, they aren't fact. And sometimes all we can do is hold on to facts. And the fact is that God is with us, even when we don't feel it. So God was with Joseph, and Joseph had that company of his loving God during his crisis. And God promises to do that for all of us, always. In Matthew 28, verse 20, "And behold, I am always with you to the end of the age." And in Hebrews 13, verse 5, "Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you or forsake you." So the passage then goes on to say, when his master saw that the Lord was with him. Now I wonder what Potiphar saw for him to deduce that the Lord was with him. In Galatians 22, when Paul is talking about the evidence that we see when God is living in with us, called the fruits of the Spirit, so they are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So whatever Potiphar saw was remarkable, remarkable enough for him to put Potiphar, who knew nothing about Joseph's God, so it's enough for Potiphar to put Joseph, an enslaved foreigner, in charge of everything he had. Now, this didn't happen overnight. So Joseph was enslaved by Potiphar for 11 years. So that's long enough for Potiphar to really get to know Joseph. So to see him on his good days and his bad days. So whatever he saw in Potiphar wasn't just in Joseph, wasn't just Joseph putting on for the cameras, if you like. You know, this was at his very core. This was his fundamental identity. So Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. So when Joseph first came to Egypt, he didn't know the language or the culture or the customs or the ways of doing business, but he clearly learned, and he gave Potiphar complete confidence that his so much so that he put his life in Joseph's hands. So here we have a man who has just experienced, arguably, the extreme end of in this world, you will have trouble. And God stood right by him, as he's promised to do with all of us. And Joseph kept close to God. Potiphar saw this. He saw the evidence of God being in Joseph's. And good came out of this dreadful situation with Joseph being put in charge of everything. Joseph was enslaved. He had no freedom. He had no agency. His options were incredibly limited. Either curl up in a ball and just feel totally overwhelmed by the unfairness of it all, and who would blame him, or remember that he wasn't on his own. He knew that God had promised to be with him, and so he just did what he could and stuck close to God. And Potiphar noticed, and good things followed. In Romans 8, verse 28, it says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him." Now, Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." So this has taken a bit of a turn. I did not see this coming when I read this passage. So this has got to be one of the ultimate temptations, hasn't it? You know, this is way more than the temptation to sleep through the alarm. Not that we could sleep through Ben's alarm. The temptation to eat all of the leftover chocolate novelties that you find on the Christmas tree when you're packing it away in a wanna. Delicious. Or the temptation to leave that chore that you've been putting off. Just put it off for another day. This is a biggie. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. So Joseph took the active decision to avoid being with her. So his limited options open to him, being an enslaved person, meant that he really, there wasn't a lot he could do. He took the best action he could by removing himself from that temptation. Now, even though Joseph didn't have many options, he had slightly more than our poor Andy Dufresne in The Shawshank Redemption, when he was receiving the unwanted attention from the sisters in the prison. He couldn't avoid them, and so he had to face the consequences. One day, Joseph went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me," but he left his cloak and he ran out of the house. I don't know if I'm misremembering, so please forgive me if I am, but I think it's in Rob Parsons' 60 Minute Marriage, and there's a story in there where he's talking about, if it is that book, where he's talking about a guy, a married man, who goes to work each day, catches the same train, and he starts chatting to a woman who's also on the same train. And he can see where this has the potential of leading. And so I don't know whether he changes carriages or changes the time train he catches. It changes time of train. Yeah, thank you, Mark. So this was Joseph doing the same thing. We're all surrounded by temptation. So there's those that we're aware of, so the really obvious ones, like the chocolates on the Christmas tree. But there's those that we're not as aware of that can easily slip under our radar, like the developing friendship in the train carriage. It's easy to linger in presence of temptation and not being aware of the power that it can have. We can kid ourselves that we're in control until we're not. And just as God has told us, you will have trouble in this world, he also warned us that there will be temptation. But in Corinthians 10, verse 13, he says, no temptation has overtaken you except as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. And it's up to us to take that escape route, just as Joseph did. So Potiphar's wife then says, "But Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me." Now, in this age of where punishment was really brutal and life was cheap, especially the life of an enslaved person, Potiphar's wife must have known that her accusation would have meant the death penalty for Joseph. And I wonder why this is why she couldn't use his name, because she didn't want to think of him maybe as a real person, because it's much easier to pass judgment or condemn or criticise the anonymous them. But Potiphar didn't sentence him to death. He had him imprisoned instead. And maybe his anger that was mentioned, maybe it was because he knew her accusation was false and that he'd been put in this position where he should have put Joseph to death. I don't know. But anyway, then we read that when Joseph was in prison, the same thing happened as with Potiphar. The man in charge, in this case the prison warder, put Joseph in charge of absolutely everything based on what he saw in Joseph. And again, another similarity with the Shawshank Redemption. In fact, I'm beginning to realise that the Shawshank Redemption is actually Genesis 39. In the fact that Andy Dufresne, he won the trust of the prison warden. So it feels as if we've now circled right back to the beginning. So this man was ripped out of his life, stripped of his family, his wealth, his status, his freedom, sold into slavery, pursued by unwelcome temptation, and ends up with his being falsely accused and thrown into prison, narrowly escaping the death penalty, just as he'd narrowly escaped death by his brothers. Happy New Year, everyone. But it's also about a man whose identity never changed. He was a man of God. He loved God and he kept close to God, as was evidenced by whatever Potiphar saw in Joseph. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. It's about a man who just clung onto his anchor, God. And throughout the passage, we're reminded that God was with Joseph. And over Christmas, we've heard so many times, we hear God referred to as Emmanuel, which means God with us. So as we pause now and ponder the passage, maybe there's something that's really spoken to you this morning. So maybe it was when we spoke about how life can be pretty rubbish sometimes, and it's no reflection on our goodness or our faith or God's regard for us, or the quality of our prayers. Or maybe we needed that reminder that God promises to be with us always, and how powerful this is to have someone who loves us so dearly stand shoulder to shoulder alongside us, whatever, listening and understanding us, whether we're too deep in crisis to feel it or not. Or that however powerless we feel, nothing can take away our innermost identity. We are children of God. And sometimes all we can do is stick close to him and let him do the rest. Or that however weak we may feel in the presence of temptation, there will be an escape route that God so wants us to take. Or maybe it's something else entirely. But whatever it is, I pray that God shows us whatever we need to hear. Amen.